Oh, to be a blobble. He put a $20 platinum coin into the slot, and the analyst, after a pause, lit up. Its eyes shone with sociability, and it swiveled about in its chair, picked up a pen and pad of long yellow paper from its desk, and said, "Good morning, sir. You may begin."
"Hello, Dr. Jones. I guess you're not the same Dr. Jones who did the definitive biography of Freud. That was a century ago."
He laughed nervously. Being a rather poverty-stricken man, he was not accustomed to dealing with the new, fully homeostatic psychoanalysts.
He said, "Should I free associate or give you background material or just what?"
Dr. Jones said, "Perhaps you could begin by telling me who you are und warum mich, why you have selected me."
"I'm George Munster, of Catwalk 4, Building WEF 395, San Francisco Condominium, established 1996.
"How do you do, Mr. Munster?" Dr. Jones held out its hand, and George Munster shook it. He found the hand to be of a pleasant body temperature and decidedly soft. The grip, however, was manly.
"You see," Munster said, "I'm an ex-GI, a war veteran. That's how I got my condominium apartment at WEF 395, Veterans Preference."
"Ah, yes," Dr. Jones said, ticking faintly as it measured the passage of time. "The war with the blobbles."
"I fought 3 years in that war," Munster said, nervously smoothing his long, black, thinning hair. "I hated the blobbles, and I volunteered. I was only 19, and I had a good job, but the crusade to clear the Sol system of blobbles came first in my mind."
Dr. Jones said, ticking and nodding. George Munster continued, "I fought well. In fact, I got 2 decorations and a battlefield citation, corporal. That's because I single-handedly wiped out an observation satellite full of blobbles. We'll never know exactly how many, because, of course, being blobbles, they tend to fuse together and unfuse confusingly."
He broke off then, feeling emotional. Even remembering and talking about the war was too much for him. He lay back on the couch, lit a cigarette, and tried to become calm.
The blobbles had emigrated originally from another star system, probably Proxima. Several thousand years ago, they had settled on Mars and on Titan, doing very well at agrarian pursuits. They were developments of the original unicellular amoeba, quite large and with a highly organized nervous system, but still amoeba, with pseudopodia, reproducing by binary fission, and in the main, offensive to Terran settlers. The war itself had broken out over ecological considerations. It had been the desire of the Foreign Aid Department of the UN to change the atmosphere on Mars, making it more usable for Terran settlers. This change, however, had made it unpalatable for the blobble colonies already there, hence the squabble. And, Munster reflected, it was not possible to change half the atmosphere of a planet, the Brownian movement being what it was. Within a period of 10 years, the altered atmosphere had diffused throughout the planet, bringing suffering, at least so they alleged, to the blobbles. In retaliation, a blobble armada had approached Terra and had put into orbit a series of technically sophisticated satellites designed eventually to alter the atmosphere of Terra. This alteration had never come about because, of course, the War Office of the UN had gone into action. The satellites had been detonated by self-instructing missiles, and the war was on. Dr. Jones said, "Are you married, Mr. Munster?"
"No, sir," Munster said. "And..."
He shuddered.
You'll see why when I've finished telling you. See, Doctor, he stubbed out his cigarette, I'll be frank. I was a Terran spy. That was my task. They gave the job to me because of my bravery in the field. I didn't ask for it. I see, Dr. Jones said. Do you? Munster's voice broke. Do you know what was necessary in those days in order to make a Terran into a successful spy among the Blobbles? Nodding, Dr. Jones said, Yes, Mr. Munster. You had to relinquish your human form and assume the repellent form of a Blobble. Munster said nothing. He clenched and unclenched his fist bitterly. Across from him, Dr. Jones ticked. That evening, back in his small apartment at WEF 395, Munster opened a fifth of Teacher's Scotch, sat by himself sipping from a cup, lacking even the energy to get a glass down from the cupboard over the sink. What had he gotten out of the session with Dr. Jones today? Nothing, as nearly as he could tell. And it had eaten deep into his meager financial resources. Meager, because for almost 12 hours out of the day he reverted, despite all the efforts of himself and the Veterans Hospitalization Agency of the UN, to his old wartime blobble shape. To a formless, unicellular-like blob right in the middle of his own apartment at WEF 395. His financial resources consisted of a small pension from the War Office. Finding a job was impossible, because as soon as he was hired, the strain caused him to revert there on the spot, in plain sight of his new employer and fellow workers. It did not assist in forming successful work relationships. Sure enough, now, at 8 in the evening, he felt himself once more beginning to revert. It was an old and familiar experience to him, and he loathed it. Hurriedly, he sipped the last of the cup of scotch, put the cup down on a table, and felt himself slide together into a homogeneous puddle. The telephone rang. I can't answer, he called to it. The phone's relay picked up his anguished message and conveyed it to the calling party. Now Munster had become a single, transparent, gelatinous mass in the middle of the rug. He undulated toward the phone. It was still ringing, despite his statement to it, and he felt furious resentment. Didn't he have enough troubles already without having to deal with a ringing phone? Reaching it, he extended a pseudopodium and snatched the receiver from the hook. With great effort, he formed his plastic substance into the semblance of a vocal apparatus, resonating dully. I'm busy, he resonated in a low, booming fashion into the mouthpiece of the phone. Call later. Call, he thought, as he hung up, tomorrow morning, when I've been able to regain my human form. The apartment was quiet now. Sighing, Munster flowed back across the carpet to the window, where he rose into a high pillar in order to see the view beyond. There was a light-sensitive spot on his outer surface, and although he did not possess a true lens, he was able to appreciate, nostalgically, the sight of San Francisco Bay, the Golden Gate Bridge, the playground for small children, which was Alcatraz Island. Damn it, he thought bitterly. I can't marry. I can't live a genuine human existence, reverting this way to the form the War Office big shots forced me into back in the war times. He had not known then, when he accepted the mission, that it would leave this permanent effect. They had assured him it was only temporary for the duration, or some such glib phrase. Duration, my ass. Munster thought with furious, impotent resentment. It's been 11 years now. The psychological problems created for him, the pressure on his psyche, were immense. Hence his visit to Dr. Jones. Once more the phone rang. Okay, Munster said aloud, and flowed laboriously back across the room to it. You want to talk to me? He said as he came closer and closer. The trip for someone in blobble form was a long one. I'll talk to you. You can even turn on the vid screen and look at me. At the phone, he snapped the switch which would permit visual communication as well as auditory. Have a good look, he said, and displayed his amorphous form before the scanning tube of the video. Dr. Jones' voice came. I'm sorry to bother you at your home, Mr. Munster, especially when you're in this, awkward condition. The homeostatic analyst paused. But I've been devoting time to problem-solving vis-a-vis your condition. I may have at least a partial solution. What? Munster said, taken by surprise. You mean to imply that medical science can now... No, no, Dr. Jones said hurriedly. The physical aspects lie out of my domain. You must keep that in mind, Munster. When you consulted me about your problems, it was the psychological adjustment that... I'll come right down to your office and talk to you, Munster said. And then he realized that he could not. In his blobble form, it would take him days to undulate all the way across town to Dr. Jones' office. Jones, he said desperately, you see the problems I face. I'm stuck here in this apartment every night beginning about 8 o'clock and lasting through until almost 7 in the morning. I can't even visit you and consult you and get help. Be quiet, Mr. Munster, Dr. Jones interrupted. I'm trying to tell you something. You're not the only one in this condition. Did you know that? Heavily, Munster said, Sure. In all, 83 Terrans were made over into blobbles at one time or another during the war. Of the 83... He knew the facts by heart. 61 survived, and now there's an organization called Veterans of Unnatural Wars, of which 50 are members. I'm a member. We meet twice a month, revert in unison. He started to hang up the phone. So this was what he had gotten for his money, this stale news. Goodbye, doctor, he murmured. Dr. Jones whirred in agitation. Mr. Munster, I don't mean other Terrans. I've researched this in your behalf, and I discover that according to captured records at the Library of Congress, 15 blobbles were formed into pseudo-Terrans to act as spies for their side. Do you understand? After a moment, Munster said, Not exactly. You have a mental block against being helped, Dr. Jones said. But here's what I want, Munster. You be at my office at 11 in the morning tomorrow. We'll take up the solution to your problem then. Good night. Wearily, Munster said, When I'm in my blobble form, my wits aren't too keen, Doctor. You'll have to forgive me. He hung up, still puzzled. So there were 15 blobbles walking around on Titan this moment, doomed to occupy human form. So what? How did that help him? Maybe he would find out at 11 tomorrow. When he strode into Dr. Jones' waiting room, he saw, seated in a deep chair in a corner by a lamp, reading a copy of Fortune, an exceedingly attractive young woman. Automatically, Munster found a place to sit from which he could eye her. Stylish, dyed white hair braided down the back of her neck. he took in the sight of her with delight, pretending to read his own copy of Fortune. Slender legs, small and delicate elbows, and her sharp, clearly featured face, the intelligent eyes, the thin, tapered nostrils, a truly lovely girl, he thought. He drank in the sight of her, until all at once she raised her head and stared coolly back at him. Dull, having to wait, Munster mumbled. The girl said, "Do you come to Dr. Jones often?" "No," he admitted. "This is just the second time." "I've never been here before," the girl said. "I was going to another electronic, fully homeostatic psychoanalyst in Los Angeles, and then late yesterday Dr. Bing, my analyst, called me and told me to fly up here and see Dr. Jones this morning. Is this one good?" Munster said, "I guess so." "We'll see," he thought. "That's precisely what we don't know at this point." The inner office door opened, and there stood Dr. Jones. "Miss Arrowsmith," it said, nodding to the girl. "Mr. Munster," it nodded to George. "Won't you both come in?" Rising to her feet, Miss Arrowsmith said, "Who pays the $20, then?" But the analyst had become silent. It had turned off. "I'll pay," Miss Arrowsmith said, reaching into her purse. "No, no," Munster said. "Let me." He got out a $20 piece and dropped it into the analyst's slot. At once, Dr. Jones said, "You're a gentleman, Mr. Munster." Smiling, it ushered the two of them into its office. "Be seated, please. Miss Arrowsmith, without preamble, please allow me to explain your condition to Mr. Munster." To Munster, it said, "Miss Arrowsmith is a blobble." Munster could only stare at the girl. "Obviously," Dr. Jones continued, "presently in human form. This, for her, is the state of involuntary reversion. During the war, she operated behind Terran lines, acting for the Blobble War League. She was captured and held, but then the war ended and she was neither tried nor sentenced."
"They released me," Miss Arrowsmith said in a low, carefully controlled voice. "Still in human form. I stayed here out of shame. I just couldn't go back to Titan and..."
Her voice wavered. "There is great shame attached to this condition," Dr. Jones said, "for any high-caste blobble." Nodding, Miss Arrowsmith sat, clutching a tiny Irish linen handkerchief and trying to look poised.
"Correct, Doctor. I did visit Titan to discuss my condition with medical authorities there. After expensive and prolonged therapy with me, they were able to induce a return to my natural form for a period of..." She hesitated. "About 1/4 of the time. But the other 3/4, I am as you perceive me now."
She ducked her head and touched the handkerchief to her right eye.
"Geez," Munster protested. "You're lucky. A human form is infinitely superior to a blobble form. I ought to know. As a blobble, you have to creep along. You're like a big jellyfish, no skeleton to keep you erect. And binary fission, it's lousy. I say really lousy, compared to the Terran form of, you know, reproduction." He colored. Dr. Jones ticked and stated, "For a period of about 6 hours, your human forms overlap. And then for about 1 hour, your blobble forms overlap. So all in all, the two of you possess 7 hours out of 24 in which you both possess identical forms. In my opinion..." It toyed with its pen and paper. 7 hours is not too bad, if you follow my meaning." After a moment, Miss Arrowsmith said, "Mr. Munster and I are natural enemies."
"That was years ago," Munster said. "Correct," Dr. Jones agreed. True, Miss Arrowsmith is basically a blobble, and you, Munster, are a Terran, but... It gestured. Both of you are outcasts in either civilization. Both of you are stateless, and hence, gradually suffering a loss of ego identity. I predict for both of you a gradual deterioration ending finally in severe mental illness. Unless you two can develop a rapprochement. The analyst was silent then. Miss Arrowsmith said softly, I think we're very lucky, Mr. Munster. As Dr. Jones said, we do overlap for 7 hours a day. We can enjoy that time together, no longer in wretched isolation. She smiled up hopefully at him, rearranging her coat. Certainly she had a nice figure. The somewhat low-cut dress gave an ideal clue to that. Studying her, Munster pondered. Give him time, Dr. Jones told Miss Arrowsmith. My analysis of him is that he will see this correctly and do the right thing. Still rearranging her coat and dabbing at her large, dark eyes, Miss Arrowsmith waited. The phone in Dr. Jones' office rang a number of years later. He answered it in his customary way. Please, sir or madam, deposit $20 if you wish to speak to me. A tough male voice on the other end of the line said, Listen, this is the UN legal office and we don't deposit $20 to talk to anybody, so trip that mechanism inside you, Jones. Yes, sir, Dr. Jones said, and with his right hand tripped the lever behind his ear that caused him to come on free. Back in 2037, the UN legal expert said, did you advise a couple to marry, a George Munster and a Vivian Arrowsmith, now Mrs. Munster? Why, yes, Dr. Jones said after consulting his built-in memory banks. Had you investigated the legal ramifications of their issue? Well, Dr. Jones said, that is not my worry. You can be arraigned for advising any action contrary to UN law. There is no law prohibiting a blobble and a Terran from marrying. The UN legal expert said, All right, doctor. I'll settle for a look at their case histories. Absolutely not, Dr. Jones said. That would be a breach of ethics. We'll get a writ and sequester them then. Go ahead. Dr. Jones reached behind his ear to shut himself off. Wait. It may interest you to know that the Munsters now have 4 children. And following the Mendelian law, the offspring comprise a strict 1-2-1 ratio. 1 blobble girl, 1 hybrid boy, 1 hybrid girl, 1 Terran girl. The legal problem arises in that the Blobble Supreme Council claims the pure-blooded Blobble girl as a citizen of Titan, and also suggests that 1 of the 2 hybrids be donated to the Council's jurisdiction. The UN legal expert explained, You see, the Munster's marriage is breaking up, they're getting divorced, and it's sticky finding which laws obtain regarding them and their issue. Yes, Dr. Jones admitted, I would think so. What has caused their marriage to break up? I don't know and don't care. Possibly the fact that both adults and 2 of the 4 children rotate daily between being Blobbles and Terrans. Maybe the strain got to be too much. If you want to give them psychological advice, consult them. Goodbye. The UN legal expert rang off. Did I make a mistake advising them to marry? Dr. Jones asked itself. I wonder if I shouldn't look them up. I owe at least that to them. Opening the Los Angeles phone book, it began thumbing through the M's. These had been 6 difficult years for the Munsters. First, George had moved from San Francisco to Los Angeles. He and Vivian had set up a household in a condominium apartment with 3 instead of 2 rooms. Vivian, being in Terran form 3/4 of the time, had been able to obtain a job. Right out in public, she gave jet flight information at the 5th Los Angeles airport. George, however, his pension comprised an amount only 1/4 that of his wife's salary, and he felt it keenly. To augment it, he had searched for a way of earning money at home. Finally, in a magazine, he had found this valuable ad. Make swift profits in your own condo. Raise giant bullfrogs from Jupiter, capable of 80-foot leaps. Can be used in frog racing, where legal, and... So in 2038, he had bought his first pair of frogs imported from Jupiter and had begun raising them for swift profits right in his own condominium apartment building in a corner of the basement that Leopold, the partially homeostatic janitor, let him use gratis. But in the relatively feeble Terran gravity, the frogs were capable of enormous leaps, and the basement proved too small for them. They ricocheted from wall to wall like green ping-pong balls and soon died. Obviously, it took more than a portion of the basement at QEK 604 Apartments to house a crop of the damned things, George realized. And then, too, their first child had been born. It had turned out to be a pure-blooded blobble. For 24 hours a day, it consisted of a gelatinous mass, and George found himself waiting in vain for it to switch over to a human form, even for a moment. He faced Vivian defiantly in this matter, during a period when both of them were in human form. "How can I consider it my child?" he asked her. "It's an alien life form to me." He was discouraged and even horrified. "Dr. Jones should have foreseen this. Maybe it's your child. It looks just like you." Tears filled Vivian's eyes.
"You mean that insultingly."
"Damn right I do. We fought you creatures. We used to consider you no better than Portuguese stingrays." Gloomily, he put on his coat. "I'm going down to Veterans of Unnatural Wars headquarters," he informed his wife. "Have a beer with the boys." Shortly, he was on his way to join with his old wartime buddies, glad to get out of the apartment house. VUW headquarters was a decrepit cement building in downtown Los Angeles left over from the 20th century and sadly in need of paint. The VUW had little funds because most of its members were, like George Munster, living on UN pensions. However, there was a pool table and an old 3D television set and a few dozen tapes of popular music and also a chess set. George generally drank his beer and played chess with his fellow members, either in human form or in blobble form. This was one place in which both were accepted. This particular evening, he sat with Pete Ruggles, a fellow veteran who also had married a blobble female, reverting, as Vivian did, to human form.
"Pete, I can't go on. I've got a gelatinous blob for a child. My whole life I've wanted a kid, and now what have I got? Something that looks like it washed up on the beach."
Sipping his beer, he too was in human form at the moment, Pete answered,
"Criminy, George, I admit it's a mess, but you must have known what you were getting into when you married her. And my God, according to Mendel's law, the next kid..."
"I mean," George broke in, "I don't respect my own wife. That's the basis of it. I think of her as a thing, and myself, too. We're both things." He drank down his beer in one gulp. Pete said meditatively,
"But from the Blobble standpoint, listen, whose side are you on?" George demanded.
"Don't yell at me," Pete said, "or I'll deck you."
A moment later, they were swinging wildly at each other. Fortunately, Pete reverted to Blobble form in the nick of time. No harm was done. Now George sat alone, in human shape, while Pete oozed off somewhere else, probably to join a group of the boys who had also assumed Blobble form.
"Maybe we can find a new society somewhere on a remote moon," George said to himself moodily. "Neither Terran nor Blobble."
"I've got to go back to Vivian," George resolved. "What else is there for me? I'm lucky to find her. I'd be nothing but a war veteran guzzling beer here at VUW headquarters every damn day and night with no future, no hope, no real life."
He had a new money-making scheme going now. It was a home mail-order business. He had placed an ad in the Saturday Evening Post for magic lodestones reputed to bring you luck from another star system entirely. The stones had come from Proxima and were obtainable on Titan. It was Vivian who had made the commercial contact for him with her people. But so far, few people had sent in the $1.50.
"I'm a failure," George said to himself.
Fortunately, the next child, born in the winter of 2039, showed itself to be a hybrid. It took human form 50% of the time, and so at last George had a child who was, occasionally anyhow, a member of his own species. He was still in the process of celebrating the birth of Maurice when a delegation of their neighbors at QEK 604 Apartments came and rapped on their door.
"We've got a petition here," the chairman of the delegation said, shuffling his feet in embarrassment, "asking that you and Mrs. Munster leave QEK 604.
"But why?" George asked, bewildered.
"You haven't objected to us up until now."
"The reason is that now you've got a hybrid youngster who will want to play with ours, and we feel it's unhealthy for our kids to..."
George slammed the door in their faces. But still, he felt the pressure, the hostility from the people on all sides of them. "And to think," he thought bitterly, "that I fought in the war to save these people. It sure wasn't worth it." An hour later, he was down at VUW headquarters once more, drinking beer and talking with his buddy Sherman Downs, also married to a Blobble.
"Sherman, it's no good. We're not wanted. We've got to emigrate. Maybe we'll try it on Titan in Viv's world."
"Christ's sakes," Sherman protested. "I hate to see you fold up, George. Isn't your electromagnetic reducing belt beginning to sell, finally?"
For the last few months, George had been making and selling a complex electronic reducing gadget which Vivian had helped him design. It was based in principle on a Blobble device popular on Titan but unknown on Terra. And this had gone over well. George had more orders than he could fill, but...
"I had a terrible experience, Sherm," George confided. "I was in a drugstore the other day, and they gave me a big order for my reducing belt, and I got so excited..."
He broke off.
"You can guess what happened. I reverted, right in plain sight of 100 customers. And when the buyer saw that, he canceled the order for the belts. It was what we all fear. You should have seen how their attitude toward me changed."
Sherm said, "Hire someone to do your selling for you, a full-blooded Terran." Thickly, George said,
"I'm a full-blooded Terran, and don't you forget it, ever."
"I just mean..."
"I know what you meant," George said,
and took a swing at Sherman. Fortunately, he missed, and in the excitement, both of them reverted to blobble form. They oozed angrily into each other for a time, but at last fellow veterans managed to separate them.
"I'm as much Terran as anyone," George thought radiated in the blobble manner to Sherman, "and I'll flatten anyone who says otherwise."
In blobble form, he was unable to get home. He had to phone Vivian to come and get him. It was humiliating.
Suicide, he decided. That's the answer. How best to do it?
In blobble form, he was unable to feel pain. Best to do it then. Several substances would dissolve him. He could, for instance, drop himself into a heavily chlorinated swimming pool, such as QEK-604 maintained in its recreation room. Vivian, in human form, found him as he reposed hesitantly at the edge of the swimming pool late one night.
"George, I beg you, go back to Dr. Jones."
"Nah,"
he boomed dully, forming a quasi-vocal apparatus with a portion of his body.
"It's no use, Viv. I don't want to go on."
Even the belts. They had been Viv's idea rather than his. He was second even there, behind her, falling constantly farther behind each passing day. Viv said,
"You have so much to offer the children."
That was true.
"Maybe I'll drop over to the UN War Office,"
he decided.
"Talk to them. See if there's anything new that medical science has come up with that might stabilize me."
"But if you stabilize as a Terran," Vivian said, "what would become of me?"
"We'd have 18 entire hours together a day. All the hours you take human form."
"But you wouldn't want to stay married to me. Because, George, then you could meet a Terran woman."
It wasn't fair to her, he realized, so he abandoned the idea. In the spring of 2041, their third child was born, also a girl, and like Maurice, a hybrid. It was blobble at night and Terran by day. Meanwhile, George found a solution to some of his problems. He got himself a mistress. He and Nina arranged to meet each other at the Hotel Elysium, a run-down wooden building in the heart of Los Angeles. "Nina," George said, sipping teacher's scotch and seated beside her on the shabby sofa which the hotel provided, "you've made my life worth living again." He fooled with the buttons of her blouse.
"I respect you," Nina Glaubman said, assisting him with the buttons, "in spite of the fact, well, you are a former enemy of our people."
"God," George protested, "we must not think about the old days. We have to close our minds to our pasts."
"Nothing but our future," he thought.
His reducing belt enterprise had developed so well that now he employed 15 full-time Terran employees and owned a small, modern factory on the outskirts of San Fernando. If UN taxes had been reasonable, he would by now be a wealthy man. Brooding on that, George wondered what the tax rate was in blobble-run lands. On Io, for instance, maybe he ought to look into it. One night at VUW headquarters, he discussed the subject with Reinhold, Nina's husband, who, of course, was ignorant of the modus vivendi between George and Nina.
"Reinhold," George said with difficulty as he drank his beer, "I've got big plans. This cradle-to-grave socialism the UN operates, it's not for me. It's cramping me. The Munster magic magnetic belt is... he gestured, "more than Terran civilization can support. You get me?"
Coldly, Reinhardt said, "but George, you are a Terran. If you emigrate to Blobble-run territory with your factory, you'll be betraying your..."
"Listen," George told him. "I've got one authentic Blobble child, two half-Blobble children, and a fourth on the way. I've got strong emotional ties with those people out there on Titan and Io."
"You're a traitor," Reinhold said and punched him in the mouth. "And not only that," he continued, punching George in the stomach, "you're running around with my wife. I'm going to kill you."
To escape, George reverted to Blobble form. Reinhold's blows passed harmlessly deep into his moist, jelly-like substance. Reinhold then reverted, too, and flowed into him murderously, trying to consume and absorb George's nucleus. Fortunately, fellow veterans pried their two bodies apart before any permanent harm was done. Later that night, still trembling, George sat with Vivian in the living room of their eight-room suite at the great new condominium apartment building, ZGF-900. It had been a close call, and now, of course, Reinhold would tell Viv. It was only a question of time. The marriage, as far as George could see, was over. This, perhaps, was their last moment together. "Viv," he said urgently, "you have to believe me. I love you. You and the children, plus the belt business, naturally, are my complete life." A desperate idea came to him. "Let's emigrate now, tonight. Pack up the kids and go to Titan, right this minute."
"I can't go," Vivian said. "I know how my people would treat me, and treat you and the children, too. George, you go. Move the factory to Io. I'll stay here."
Tears filled her dark eyes.
"Hell," George said. "What kind of life is that? With you on Terra and me on Io, that's no marriage.
And who'll get the kids?"
Probably Viv would get them, but his firm employed top legal talent. Perhaps he could use it to solve his domestic problems. The next morning, Vivian found out about Nina and hired an attorney of her own.
"Listen," George said on the phone, talking to his top legal talent, Henry Ramiro. "Get me custody of the fourth child. It'll be a Terran. And we'll compromise on the two hybrids. I'll take Maurice and she can have Kathy.
And naturally, she gets that blob, the first so-called child. As far as I'm concerned, it's hers anyhow." He slammed the receiver down and then turned to the board of directors of his company. "Now where were we," he demanded, "in our analysis of Io tax laws?" During the next weeks, the idea of a move to Io appeared more and more feasible from a profit and loss standpoint. "Go ahead and buy land on Io," George instructed his business agent in the field, Tom Hendricks, "and get it cheap. We want to start right." To his secretary, Miss Nolan, he said, "Now keep everyone out of my office until further notice. I feel an attack coming on from anxiety over this major move off Terra to Io." He added, "and personal worries."
"Yes, Mr. Munster,"
Miss Nolan said, ushering Tom Hendricks out of George's private office.
"No one will disturb you."
She could be counted on to keep everyone out while George reverted to his wartime blobble shape, as he often did these days. The pressure on him was immense. When, later in the day, he resumed human form, George learned from Miss Nolan that a Dr. Jones had called.
"I'll be damned," George said, thinking back to 6 years ago. "I thought it'd be in the junk pile by now."
To Miss Nolan, he said, "Call Dr. Jones. Notify me when you have it. I'll take a minute off to talk to it."
It was like old times back in San Francisco.
Shortly, Miss Nolan had Dr. Jones on the line.
Doctor, George said, leaning back in his chair and swiveling from side to side and poking at an orchid on his desk.
Good to hear from you.
The voice of the homeostatic analyst came in his ear.
Mr. Munster, I note that you now have a secretary.
Yes, George said. I'm a tycoon. I'm in the reducing belt game. It's somewhat like the flea collar that cats wear. Well, what can I do for you?
I understand you have 4 children now.
Actually 3, plus a 4th on the way. Listen, that 4th doctor is vital to me. According to Mendel's law, it's a full-blooded Terran, and by God, I'm doing everything in my power to get custody of it.
He added, Vivian, you remember her, is now back on Titan, among her own people where she belongs, and I'm putting some of the finest doctors I can get on my payroll to stabilize me. I'm tired of this constant reverting night and day. I've got too much to do for such nonsense.
Dr. Jones said, From your tone, I can see you're an important busy man, Mr. Munster. You've certainly risen in the world since I saw you last.
Get to the point, George said impatiently. Why'd you call?
I thought perhaps I could bring you and Vivian together again.
Bah, George said contemptuously. That woman, never.
Listen, Doctor, I have to ring off. We're in the process of finalizing on some basic business strategy here at Munster Incorporated.
Mr. Munster, Dr. Jones asked, is there another woman?
There's another blobble, George said, if that's what you mean. And he hung up the phone.
2 blobbles are better than none, he said to himself. And now back to business.
He pressed a button on his desk, and at once Miss Nolan put her head into the office.
Miss Nolan, George said, get me Hank Ramiro. I want to find out.
Mr. Ramiro is waiting on the other line, Miss Nolan said. He says it's urgent.
Switching to the other line, George said, Hi, Hank, what's up?
I've just discovered, his top legal advisor said, that to operate your factory on Io, you must be a citizen of Titan.
We ought to be able to fix that up, George said.
But to be a citizen of Titan, Ramiro hesitated. I'll break it to you easy as I can, George. You have to be a blobble.
Damn it, I am a blobble, George said. At least part of the time, won't that do?
No, Ramiro said. I checked into that, knowing of your affliction, and it's got to be 100% of the time, night and day.
George said. This is bad. But we'll overcome it somehow. Listen, Hank, I've got an appointment with Eddie Fulbright, my medical coordinator. I'll talk to you after, okay?
He rang off and then sat scowling and rubbing his jaw.
Well, he decided, if it has to be, it has to be. Facts are facts, and we can't let them stand in our way.
Picking up the phone, he dialed his doctor, Eddie Fulbright.
The $20 platinum coin rolled down the chute and tripped the circuit. Dr. Jones came on, glanced up, and saw a stunning, sharp-breasted young woman whom it recognized, by means of a quick scan of its memory banks, as Mrs. George Munster, the former Vivian Arrowsmith.
Good day, Vivian, Dr. Jones said cordially, but I understood you were on Titan.
It rose to its feet, offering her a chair.
Dabbing at her large, dark eyes, Vivian sniffled,
Doctor, everything is collapsing around me. My husband is having an affair with another woman. All I know is that her name is Nina, and all the boys down at VUW headquarters are talking about it. Presumably she's a Terran. We're both filing for divorce, and we're having a dreadful legal battle over the children.
She arranged her coat modestly. I'm expecting our fourth.
This I know, Dr. Jones said. A full-blooded Terran this time, if Mendel's law holds, although it only applied to litters.
Mrs. Munster said miserably, I've been on Titan talking to legal and medical experts, gynecologists, and especially marital guidance counselors. I've had all sorts of advice during the past month. Now I'm back on Terra, but I can't find George. He's gone.
I wish I could help you, Vivian, Dr. Jones said. I talked to your husband briefly the other day, but he spoke only in generalities. Evidently, he's such a big tycoon now that it's hard to approach him.
And to think, Vivian sniffled, that he achieved it all because of an idea I gave him, a blobble idea.
The ironies of fate, Dr. Jones said. Now, if you want to keep your husband, Vivian...
I'm determined to keep him, Dr. Jones. Frankly, I've undergone therapy on Titan, the latest and most expensive. It's because I love George so much, even more than I love my own people or my planet.
Eh? Dr. Jones said.
Through the most modern developments in medical science in the Sol system, Vivian said, I've been stabilized, Dr. Jones. Now I am in human form 24 hours a day instead of 18. I've renounced my natural form in order to keep my marriage with George.
The supreme sacrifice, Dr. Jones said, touched.
Now if I can only find him, Doctor.
At the groundbreaking ceremonies on Io, George Munster flowed gradually to the shovel, extended a pseudopodium, seized the shovel, and with it managed to dig a symbolic amount of soil.
This is a great day, he boomed hollowly, by means of the semblance of a vocal apparatus into which he had fashioned the slimy plastic substance which made up his unicellular body.
Right, George, Hank Ramiro agreed, standing nearby with the legal documents. The Ionian official, like George, a great transparent blob, oozed across to Ramiro, took the documents, and boomed,
These will be transmitted to my government. I'm sure they're in order, Mr. Ramiro.
I guarantee you, Ramiro said to the official. Mr. Munster does not revert to human form at any time. He's made use of some of the most advanced techniques in medical science to achieve this stability at the unicellular phase of his former rotation. Munster would never cheat.
This historic moment, the great blob that was George Munster thought radiated to the throng of local blobbles attending the ceremonies, means a higher standard of living for Ionians who will be employed. It will bring prosperity to this area, plus a proud sense of national achievement in the manufacture of what we recognize to be a native invention, the Munster Magic Magnetic Belt.
The throng of blobbles thought-radiated cheers.
This is a proud day in my life, George Munster informed them, and began to ooze by degrees back to his car, where his chauffeur waited to drive him to his permanent hotel room at Io City. Someday he would own the hotel. He was putting the profits from his business in local real estate. It was the patriotic and the profitable thing to do, other Ionians, other blobbles had told him. I'm finally a successful man, George Munster thought radiated to all close enough to pick up his emanations. Amid frenzied cheers, he oozed up the ramp and into his Titan-made car.
Note. Oh, to be a blobble. Well, see, there were these blobbles. May 6th, 1963.
Galaxy, February 1964. At the beginning of my writing career in the early 50s, Galaxy was my economic mainstay. Horace Gold at Galaxy liked my writing, whereas John W. Campbell Jr. at Astounding considered my writing not only worthless, but as he put it, nuts. By and large, I liked reading Galaxy because it had the broadest range of ideas, venturing into the soft sciences, such as sociology and psychology, at a time when Campbell, as he once wrote me, considered psionics a necessary premise for science fiction. Also, Campbell said, the psionic character in the story had to be in charge of what was going on. So, Galaxy provided a latitude which Astounding did not. However, I was to get into an awful quarrel with Horace Gold. He had the habit of changing your stories without telling you, adding scenes, adding characters, removing downbeat endings in favor of upbeat endings. Many writers resented this. I did more than resent this. Despite the fact that Galaxy was my main source of income, I told Gold that I would not sell to him unless he stopped altering my stories, after which he bought nothing from me at all. It was not, then, until Fred Pohl became editor of Galaxy that I began to appear there again. Oh, to Be a Blobble is a story which Fred Pohl bought. In this story, my enormous anti-war bias is evident, a bias which had, ironically, pleased Gold. I wasn't thinking of the Vietnam War, but war in general. In particular, how a war forces you to become like your enemy. Hitler had once said that the true victory of the Nazis would be to force its enemies, the United States in particular, to become like the Third Reich, i.e., a totalitarian society, in order to win. Hitler, then, expected to win even in losing. As I watched the American military-industrial complex grow after World War II, I kept remembering Hitler's analysis, and I kept thinking how right the son of a bitch was. We had beaten Germany, but both the U.S. and the USSR were getting more and more like the Nazis with their huge police systems every day. Well, it seemed to me there was a little wry humor in this, but not much. Maybe I could write about it without getting too deep into polemics. But the issue presented in this story is real. Look what we had to become in Vietnam just to lose, let alone to win. Can you imagine what we'd have had to become to win? Hitler would have gotten a lot of laughs out of it, and the laughs would have been on us. And to a very great extent, in fact, were. And they were hollow and grim laughs, without humor of any kind. 1979. Here I nailed down the ultimate meaningless irony of war. The human turns into a blobble, and the blobble, his enemy, turns into a human. And there it all is, the futility, the black humor, the stupidity. And in the story, they all wind up happy. 1976. End note.